Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH and 96.5 TIC also. Our guest today is Democratic 1st District Congressman John Larson. We're going to be getting an update on his campaign for re-election and also ahead of this year's primary, August 11th. And we'll get an update on the latest from Washington. Congressman, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Morgan.
Let's go back to the Democratic convention in May. We'll start here. The party endorsed one of your competitors, Luke Bronin. What's the message you have for your supporters?
Well, the message I have for my supporters hasn't changed. We're in a crisis, a constitutional crisis, and I'm taking on Donald Trump every single day that we're down here. We had some big successes just even yesterday, getting four Republican colleagues to join with us in making sure that the president has to come before us as it relates to the War Powers Act, which, you know, as you know, Morgan, you know, that's under the First Amendment of the Constitution, and the president is required to come before Congress. And after Vietnam, the War Powers Act was created to make sure that it was specific about having a strategy and a rationale for why we're going into a conflict and an exit strategy before we send the men and women who wear the uniform of this nation, before we send off these brave people. Congress has got to approve, and the president has to make the case before the Congress and the American people. So that was an enormous vote yesterday. And for four Republicans who deserve a lot of credit to come over and vote with the Democrats is, again, I think, a clear sign. Just like they did, there were four Republicans back in December of 2025 who stood with us on people's rising health care costs. But because people across the country are speaking out, and because we continue to put the pressure on the Trump administration, from Elon Musk and Doge to ICE and to this illegal war that the president has perpetrated in Iran, people are standing up, and I'm proud of these Republicans and, of course, all the Democrats who stood with them and cast this vote, something I've been opposing from the outset.
The president's unlikely to pass this, but as for the Senate, how do you think they're going to be reacting, your colleagues in that chamber?
Of course, as you probably know, the Senate already has passed a similar resolution. So, but the resolutions have to be identical, and so there will be some more back and forth between the House and the Senate, and many will say, well, of course, Trump will never sign it. And we don't know what that case will be, but there is quite a bit of logic since he believes he's above the law and believes that he doesn't have to come before the Congress. And I think, Morgan, that's what's at stake here. And so we've, since 2025, this has intensified with him, starting with first and foremost sending Elon Musk and Doge to rummage through Social Security and go after people's personal data and information. Why? Because they were after the $2,700,000,000 in the Social Security Trust Fund. And as importantly, they want your personal information. That is a direct violation of the law. And don't take my word for it. Take the Trump administration Justice Department, who now have had two whistleblowers come out, and they have acknowledged that this has been ongoing. Trump, and we have the next week, we have Social Security head coming before Mr. Bisignano, and he's going to be questioned on this directly, as well as next week, Social Security, and that's the other big news, the Social Security Administration. Well, it's the trust will issue their report. And again, we're going to find that we're losing money and we're coming to the date more rapidly when everyone will see an across-the-board cut. And as was pointed out in the article, the state and the people that are impacted the most are the people in the state of Connecticut. And so when people tell me, especially when my opponents say, well, that's all he talks about is Social Security. Well, I talk about it because it impacts 159,000 people just in the first congressional district, and because it's vital to their survival, because for 40% of all Americans who are on Social Security, this is the only thing that they have. So this is a major issue that has to be, and who's impacted the most? You know this, Morgan, in people who are on fixed incomes. And who are they? For the most part, the elderly of this nation. And with 159,000 just in the first district, now that should get everybody's attention and focus. I'm proud that I'll be going back to Congress and we're going to win the majority, and I'll be chair of the Social Security Subcommittee on Ways and Means, and we have the legislation that corrects this and have the commitment from the Speaker of the House to make sure it's one of the top bills taken up in the first 100 days that Democrats control the House of Representatives. We're still going to push now because we have to, and we have to continue this fight and stop him from the onslaught to privatize Social Security, because they're after the $2,700,000,000. Even a guy like Elon Musk, who makes over $500,000, salivates over getting his hands on $2,700,000,000 of the people's money.
Congressman Larson on Face Connecticut with us this morning on WTIC and our sister stations as well. Congressman, in Connecticut, Governor Lamont has just committed to spending some reserve money to help those who have been affected by SNAP cuts and who are expected to soon be affected by SNAP cuts. And it's also seen some Republicans in the state legislature here in Connecticut voice support for the federal government restoring those benefits, because Connecticut's reserves alone cannot fill that hole. Is that something that you can commit to if there's a Democratic majority to replenishing that money?
Oh, absolutely. And here's the deal. First and foremost, what Trump says on one hand is, well, I'm not touching Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security. What he's done is shifted the responsibility from the federal government onto the states. And in talking to the state legislature and, again, commending them and Governor Lamont for reacting the way they have, but I think all 50 states, and not just Democrats, as you point out, Republicans, understand that this is a shared burden and that the federal government has a role. And the most disconcerting thing, Morgan, is that why is Trump doing this? Well, he's doing this so he can make room for a tax cut for billionaires. Why are they opposed to Social Security? Because how do we pay for Social Security going forward? I don't know if you're familiar with my bill, Social Security 2100, but the way that we pay for it is that we ask everybody to pay their fair share. The average working person pays their fair share into Social Security, but billionaires, its Social Security is capped. I'm in favor of lifting the cap altogether. But just lifting the cap on people making over $400,000 allows us to expand the program, make sure nobody can retire into poverty, make sure nobody waits, nobody dies waiting to get their disability payment, and to make sure that the children and the widows and the spouses that are dependent upon Social Security are able to receive those benefits, and the program is able to sustain themselves. It's what keeps capitalism. It's the safety net for capitalism and entrepreneurialism. And all billionaires ought to be able to pay their fair share. They ought to be able to pay what you and me and everyone else in the state of Connecticut is required to do, because it's in the best interest of the state. In our state alone, Morgan, and I think you'll appreciate it, we get somewhere in the neighborhood of $330 million that will come in just in the first district monthly. What do people do with that money, that Social Security checks that come in to the 159,000 people in the first district. They spend it at their local grocery store. They spend it on rent or their mortgage, on putting gas in their car, on going to the pharmacy to pick up their drugs. In other words, it goes right back into the economy. The genius of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, or I should say my mother would be proud if I mentioned Frances Perkins, who actually was the woman and the real person behind Social Security who came up with the concept. But their brilliance was that they recognized that in order to save capitalism, we needed a safety net so that when people, through no fault of their own or otherwise, have the ability for the system to take care of them. And every town hall I do, I always ask everybody, raise your hand if you've ever missed a Social Security payment. And the fact is, they haven't, because it's the best insurance program that we have. And Congress, shamefully, haven't addressed Social Security comprehensively across the board since 1971. Richard Nixon was president of the United States then. That's why they're so, that's the urgency around it. And when this report comes out, again, think of this, Morgan, 10,000 baby boomers a day become eligible for Social Security. This is a serious crisis that's here, that's now, and can't be put off so that billionaires who are already doing extraordinarily well, and all that's being asked of them is to pay the same thing that everybody else does? Does that seem like it's unreasonable to you?
There has been a lot of back and forth in the race about funding and who's getting what money and so on. And that's pretty much been between you and Bronin back and forth there. And he was just on the show recently, critical that you've accepted, in his words, corporate PAC money and that you're feeling the heat of the race. How do you respond to that? Because I know that you've had pointed criticism to Bronin.
Well, first of all, that has very little to do with the amount of money that comes into the district. I'd be interested to know what kind of money that Luke Bronin has brought to the district. I know the billions that we brought into Hartford, including when he was mayor. And the funny thing about that is that I didn't hear him saying then that that I'm too old, that I should step aside so that he could run for the position. I guess because he was running for governor then. I don't quite know or understand, but let's be clear. We need campaign finance reform. When you look at Jillian Gilchrist and what she's talking about, she's spot on. But here's the deal. We've already done that twice in the House of Representatives. And I was named by Nancy Pelosi to head up campaign finance reform. And we based our campaign finance reform on the Connecticut model. And I've passed that twice in the House of Representatives. Nobody else has. That's what I was saying earlier in terms of who's equipped to deliver the most for the first congressional district. And it's not just talking about it. It's actually having delivered it. It's actually having written the legislation. It's actually working across the aisle with Republicans. We just dropped off a $500,000 check to the Hartford Public Library. And we got that money when the Republicans control the executive, the House, and the Senate. How? Because I know how to work across the aisle to get things done. Yes. I'm going to stand up against Trump and be critical where I believe that we need to and stand up for everyone's rights. But I also know how to work across the aisle to get things done. And I think my record and the amounts of money that we've brought into our communities, not just the city of Hartford, but all 27 communities, whether it's Heartland or Hartford, every one of them have benefited from my service in the 1st Congressional District.
Ahead of that August 11th primary, they're telling me that they're on the ground, they're meeting with residents throughout the 1st District, and of course, with your role, you're splitting time between visiting members of the district, but also being down in Washington. How are you budgeting your time?
Well, we have a full-time job down here, and it's, as we just indicated, yesterday was a very dramatic day, et cetera. So, yes, it's going to be, it's a lot easier when you're back in the district, and, you know, I look forward and we'll be back here as often as we possibly can. And when we are, we'll be in all 27 towns that we represent and being out there and making the case. And I think in every single town I go to, I bring, you know, what we've done for that community, how much we've delivered. And we usually have listening sessions where we hear what's on their mind and what their concerns are. And the people I'm listening to most, and this is frankly what the campaign is about, is affordability. It's about, you know, the gas tax. We're going to be introducing legislation to eliminate the federal gas tax so that we can provide a modicum of relief to people who depend on gas to get to their jobs, et cetera. It's off the charts. I don't have to tell you that or anyone in the state of Connecticut. You realize it. But and what could the federal government do? Well, I also think we have to rein in and look at taxation on oil companies as well. But clearly, this illegal war that's going on right now is in part and parcel to the direct rise in gas taxes. And that's why I'm so focused on fighting that and letting the people know back home what I'm committed to and what I'm involved in.
That gas tax that you just mentioned, are you looking at making that permanent or is that just a suspension?
Well, we're looking at a suspension initially because the permanent, as you know, the gas tax is used to help infrastructure and improve it, et cetera. But right now, in these times, I think that we're going to have to put on pause things while we go forward with providing the relief for working families that they richly deserve.
And as far as electricity, because that's another issue that's come up both locally, but your competitors in this congressional race have brought up electricity. What are you looking at as far as that concern?
Well, we're concerned about all costs, including electricity. And so what, you know, we have to be looking at starting with both not only the cost of energy across the board, but also looking at the cost that people are experiencing vis-a-vis education, what it takes someone to go to college or what it costs them to get a specific trade, what they have to pay out of pocket to get that. And when they incur debt, as so many have, the mountains of debt overwhelm them so that we have to come up with the remedy. My remedy is pretty clear and straight. Along with Rosa DeLauro, we've said, hey, listen, for every year of public service you'd be willing to provide, we'll give you the equivalent of 2 years of in-state college tuition or loan forgiveness. Nothing's free. You have to put in your time and have to do your work, but nobody should be saddled with those mountains of debt. And the same thing goes for home purchases and housing. The need to develop affordable housing and the providing, again, on the Ways and Means Committee, a committee that will oversee most of these issues are tax-related. And whether it's education or whether it's housing or whether it's even environmental issues as well and energy issues, the tax portion of that is always dealt with in the Ways and Means Committee, and especially in the areas of people on fixed income and people that enjoy the programs of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Congressman, we're down to our final moment here. Is there anything else that you'd like the First District to know about the race and what you're up to in Washington.
Well, listen, as we said, and Morgan, first and foremost, thank you for the opportunity to be on the to be on your show. But I think it comes down to affordability again, and providing working people during these times with the relief that they need. And I think for people, they have to look at, well, you know, the past is often prologue. What is his record? What has he done? You know, and to be able to go over, you know, just the list of things from the first family and medical leave bill authored in the state to the first state to codify Roe versus Wade, to the first state that banned assault weapons, and the first state to come up with family resource centers to provide affordable daycare for people, to be the first to designate the Connecticut River as a Blue Ways River, the first to establish a center for advanced technology to create manufacturing jobs, the first time we were ever to make the F-35 the sole source for engine production, which spawned jobs in the first district, the first to make Coatesville a major national park for the state of Connecticut, the co-author of campaign finance reform that is definitely needed in this campaign to address all of the issues you mentioned before, as well as to be the first to serve on the first committee ever on global warming. I've been at the forefront of these things. This is why I'm fighting. And look, I'm not running for any other office. I'm running to fulfill a promise. That promise is about Social Security specifically. And for 40% of this nation, that's the only benefit that they have. That 40% of the people we're talking about are the very people that I grew up with in East Hartford. These are blue-collar towns and blue-collar workers that this is the only benefit that they have. And to not have this adjusted or changed in over 54 years is a crime. To see 5 million fellow Americans getting below poverty level checks from the wealthiest nation in the world, and simply because Congress has enacted, that's why Social Security 2100 and Social Security is so critical to so many people on fixed incomes. And when you add that with the affordability issues, that has got to be our focus. That will be my focus. And frankly, I'm in the best person to do it. It would be a shame to walk away from this. And I told Luke Bronin this to his face. You don't know me if you think I would walk away from the very people that I grew up with, who are the ones that are on fixed incomes and in need of relief that they have earned. Everybody has earned their Social Security. It's not an entitlement. It's an earned benefit. And I'm going to continue with every ounce of energy that I have to fight for the people of this district and across this nation to make sure that they get the benefits that they paid for. These are not entitlements, and that everybody pays their share. And as we said, Morgan, I don't think it's too much to ask of billionaires that they do. Elon Musk is not going to go broke paying Social Security. Everybody else has to do it. Why should he be exempt?
I'm sure we'll talk again as the campaign moves forward.
Look forward to it, Morgan. Thank you for the time.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.